Ilka Hartman.
Oh. Okay, you're a little hot there. Okay.
Now I'm a little cooler.
Yeah, you're much cooler, Liam.
Any second now, renowned journalist and photographer, longtime Bay Area historian, Ilka Hartman is going to be calling up. We were lucky enough to get Ilka to write an original article for the new issue of Fault Lines, documenting the 35th anniversary of the Alcatraz occupation, and we printed some of her pictures as well. Any second now, she'll be calling into the studio to talk about her experiences covering this occupation. It's really kind of a crazy story. A lot of people in San Francisco don't really know the history of it, but you know, basically, after the prison got shut down, Alcatraz was just sitting there, and a lot of the Native American resource centers in the city had fallen into neglect and burned down, and that's probably her, so I'll just let her tell the rest of the story as soon as we get the phone hooked up right here. Pod is just putting the through the call right now.
Welcome to Enemy Combatant Radio.
Thank you.
And thank you for your story in the Fault Lines issue. We're enjoying it very much. And maybe you could talk a little bit of your relationship to the Alcatraz story.
The Indians occupied Alcatraz. They tried several times. And on November 20th, actually, about 92 Indians were able to get onto the island and stay there. And the atmosphere at that time in the Bay Area had been that people were very aware of the rights of the different, as they were called at the time, minorities. And people had been working to publicize the rights of the African Americans, as you know, originally in the civil rights movement in the South, and then in our area, in the Bay Area, there had been the Black Panthers and then the United Farm Workers in the San Joaquin Valley under Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta. And at UC Berkeley and especially San Francisco State, there had been a long strike for third world studies at both campuses. And there was also a Native American woman involved in that at UC Berkeley, Laneda Boyer. And otherwise, as far as I know, there was not much talk about the rights of Native Americans at that time. So when the Indians first occupied Alcatraz early in the month of November, on November 9th, and people read it in the papers, the general consensus was, this is the right thing. This is what needed to be done. Now the Indians are able to speak up about their conditions. And they were able to do that. They tried two times on that day, and then later on in the month on the 20th, they were able to have an invasion that lasted for 19 months. And during that time, the Indian people who then started to come from all over the country were able to describe to the press the conditions under which they had been living practically for the last 500 years. Since the Europeans came to colonize this country. And
now, Ilka, I don't mean to interrupt you, but one of the things you talk about in the article was about how a lot of people had kind of been ashamed of their heritage, and after this, when they saw everyone coming together, it kind of unified different tribes and kind of, you know, gave these people a new sense of purpose. Do you want to talk about the general feelings that you were kind of getting into there about when you visited the island, the solidarity between the different tribes and how it affected people's own views of their heritage?
Yes, that was very important. There were two different things. The first, what you mentioned, that many people from different tribes had not even been friends or had ever been connected to people from other tribes. That was very, very important, and that for the first time they met people from other tribes that are really people from other nations that originally speak different languages, have different customs, like different food, and so on. And then there were the urban Indians that knew very little about their native background because they had to be somewhat secretive, or sometimes felt they had to be really secretive and didn't even admit that they were Indian. And these people all came together, and that's why they called themselves Indians of All Tribes. That was really, you could say, a revolutionary name, because that showed the solidarity of the different types of Indians and also the urban Indians that now met the people from their actual heritage for the first time.
So how would you compare the conditions for a lot of Native Americans in the Bay Area now as compared to how they were 35 years ago when this occupation took place?
You know, it's different for each individual. There are people who have been able to become quite successful because people were able to go to college and because laws were changed regarding Indians. But there are also still people who have to live in exactly the way they did then, you know, people who live under very, very poor social conditions and people who have drug and alcohol problems. But in the Bay Area, there is a very, very, very lively urban Indian community, and there are many organizations and also many cultural and spiritual events that take place that strengthen that community.
Now, as you talk about an article, they were kind of sold out. The Indians were kind of sold out by the government. They didn't really get anything they were looking for. You know, none of the promises that the presidential administration at the time were alluding to came true. But there was a lot of positive aspects that resulted from this occupation. Do you want to talk a little bit about the legacy of what this meant for the people involved and how it changed their view on like what they could do to get more you know, respect for their heritage?
I think that it gave people really an enormous amount of self-confidence, and many, many people, even as you saw in the article, an old man said he'd been waiting for this his whole life. Just the fact that Native people were standing up against the government was just an enormous encouragement for people, mm-hmm. and that spark has continued for all this time, all these 35 years, I think. And people who were part of that occupation have gone back to their home reservations or worked in the urban Indian community and took on leadership roles because it gave them that inspiration to work hard, but also the feeling that you can achieve something and that you can actually follow a vision that you have and make change. And that has certainly happened. And then also, as far as our research could tell, we've done quite a bit of research and interviews with people involved, including former Nixon aides. We came to the conclusion that the change of laws regarding Native Americans were most likely because of all that was exposed during the occupation about the conditions under which Native Americans had to live. And so in the summer of 1970, the occupation was from 69 November until June 71, and in the summer of 1970, Nixon stopped two very detrimental laws for Native Americans, and one was called the Relocation Law, and it relocated Indians from the reservations to the cities, and it was not successful at all, and the other one was called Termination,
right.
And that actually tried to terminate the status of Indian tribes mm-hmm. and integrate them as individuals
right.
into
and that's
American mainstream, and he stopped that, and then a new law of self-determination was created, and a lot of land was returned to Indian tribes,
yeah,
hundreds of thousands of acres.
Yeah,
so that was very,
definitely.
Very
Let's mention the article. I'm sorry I'm going to have to cut you off. We've got to get off at 6 o'clock to hand it over to the next station on the Critical Mass Radio Network, though. But for anyone who's interested, ILCA does have a photographic display going on right now in Santa Rosa. You can get the information at www.ilkahartman.com, ILKAHARTMANN. Thank you very much for talking with us, Ilka. I'm sorry we had to cut you off, but we do have to go. But
thank you, Ilka.
You're
we appreciate you calling, and thanks for listening to Enemy Combatant Radio.
And this has been Enemy Combatant Radio's fourth Critical Mass segment, and I'm not sure which station is coming up next, but thanks for tuning in, and check into enemycombatantradio.net for weekly programs that are happening here live through the rest of the week.
Thank you, Pod.
All right. Thanks, Liam. And everybody, Heather and Wayne, you want to tell us about that sale in the next 30 seconds?